Museum of the Moving Image welcomes you to the Pinewood Dialogues Online, an archive of conversations with innovative creative figures in film, television, and digital media. Visit Museum of the Moving Image in New York City or online at www.movingimage.us.
So basically, we were looking for a project since then, and one day he invited us and he said, "Oh, I have an idea about these two brothers. There's football involved, but it's just the context. I don't want to shoot a sports film, and it's about the rivalry and brotherhood, I guess." So we said, "Amazing, let's do it." And it's, I think, the first time I've agreed to do something without a script, because we knew Carlos was an amazing writer, and also he was inviting us to the whole process, you know. To
the other times you accepted without having read the script, but there was a script.
Oh, that, yeah. I mean, that just happened in the last film I did, yeah. But once I realized the script was thick enough, you know, to be a future film, I was like, yeah, let's do it. So basically, Carlos started to write this, and we kind of read every draft that was coming out. We gave notes. We talked a lot about it. We were invited to the whole process, and I guess that's why this was the project we decided to act again in. We've been working a lot together as producers. I produced his film, his first film as director. He did the same with me. We have a film festival. So we've been working together a lot.
I mean, you've known each other since you were kids, right?
Yeah. He met me when I was born.
He welcomed him to the world.
One of the first, One of the first images I had was Gael saying, "You know," and I was like, "Yeah, you want to be my friend? We should do a film together."
I said, "Let's wait."
Let's wait till.
Not yet.
Right, but you already were speaking very.
And we were naked. You know, right. But he said, "Oh, no, let's wait."
But I know what you're
okay,
talking
this
about.
This sounds, yeah. This sounds like a Michel Gondry film you're describing.
Ah,
yeah. So,
is he here?
No, he's not here. He's in this town somewhere. So,
oh, bastard. Okay, I thought he was going to be here. Okay,
no, sorry. So, do both of you have siblings? I know that. Carlos Cuarón, of course, is the brother of Alfonso Cuarón, and this is Carlos's first film as the director. But do you each have siblings also?
Yeah. I have one brother of 18, one sister of 13, 14 actually, and one brother of 10.
Hmm. Wow.
They're little. Yeah, I'm the oldest.
And I have a sister that is, she's 53, I guess. I shouldn't be saying this, no? She's older. Yeah. But she looks so young, you have an idea. But yeah, I'm kind of a... I always live just with my father. We have half right. brothers.
Right. Could you talk a bit about the process of developing the script? You said it was an idea. It's a very close group that you're working with, Alfonso and Carlos and the production company. Could you talk a bit about how it developed, you know, how the story and the script developed?
So after that myth of Alfonso Carlos telling us the story and us wanting to do the play the same character, and him saying, "Okay, I'll just invent two characters." After that, he started actually to write the script and he had a few drafts until we met once in London. No, in London we had a lunch and sort of the characters started to take more shape and we started to talk about them. And Alfonso and Alejandro González Iñárritu and Guillermo del Toro got on board, which meant that Carlos had to talk to each of them separately. So you can imagine how Carlos, after every conversation with them, he was like, "Oh, I have to rewrite so much now." And so he wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote. And all of a sudden, there was the final script that we were going to start to do. And the first thing that we did was to acclimate.
Yeah.
Into the characters was to go to Cihuatlán in Jalisco, which is Well, it's in the border between Jalisco and Colima. And we went there, and we just got a glimpse of what was like to be in a banana plantation, where the characters will come from in a way. And at that point, we decided, thanks to also Carlos's, sounds funny, Carlos's idea of wanting to do an arbitrary reality, you know, to create the reality altogether and to stylize it a lot. So we decided at that point to just invent everything and grasp a little bit of things from the accent, from the region, but also just invent an accent, you know, and altogether just create something new. Hmm. And take different things from that region, from the north of Mexico, from people we know, people that worked in the banana plantation, and that's where everything started to get into shape, with the accordion, with the singing, with Diego started to do a lot of research in betting, underground betting in Mexico, didn't you?
It wasn't called research, but... I just have this problem, you know, this gambling problem, and I said to Carlos, please write something about it so I can tell my family I'm doing work, you know, when I go. And but I never bet anything that was not mine. I bet just my money. I lost all my money, and that's how I mean, I talked to Carlos because he knows nothing about betting or anything. I asked him to cast all the members that have gotten my money in all those nights. So the guy you see there that beats me, that's a real guy that I met in a shithole where we went to play, you know. It was this kind of house, that beautiful house, huge, like it looked like a politician's or something. And you would get there, and there was no one in the street, and you would have to honk the ging, ging, and a guy would come out, grab your car, take it somewhere else, get you inside, and inside there was like just Vegas style, as this guy says, exactly the same way. And I lost, I mean, well, a lot. But I met this guy that played with glasses on and was in pajamas, and he got like $5,000 from me that night. Well, from me and my friend. And the day Carlos said, "Oh, we have a gap. We don't have the actor." I said, "Oh, let's call this guy," and it felt so nice. I made him feel so bad, you know, because I gave him the chance to be in a Cuarón film, and it was the same guy that he didn't give me the money back, you know. He was feeling like shit, like, "Oh my, this is my first job as an actor, and I fucked up this guy and probably his relation." So it was beautiful, and it was kind of cool to say all in, and it was not my money. It was just two or three takes, but it felt so perfect. So, all in, and it was beautiful feeling. And since then, I haven't gambled. So
that's good.
Thank you, guys. I mean,
but
thank
he gets
you.
A drive out of talking about it, and no, you get the high.
Yeah.
Out of saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's kind of that's where everything started to kind of get into shape, and also we started to get into shape. Actually,
you had to, yeah, to yeah.
The football, soccer also
and
was
and,
the
and,
same, no?
And lose a bit of weight, which was also a great excuse to be able to finally train in our lives, because we had never trained football, but we played football, but we never properly trained. And
not just that, having like 20, I guess 20 guys playing for us, you know, that even though, you know, a normal teammate would never pass the ball to me if there was any danger, they would have to do it, you know. It was perfect. It was like Gael was there standing, he would just have to say, "Hey," and the ball would come to him, you know. It was like a dream come true.
Kind of, since then we were exercising this this anxiety that we had to eventually feel like professional football players, and mainly one of the reasons why we wanted to do the film, actually, to be honest, of course,
was to have people think that you can play soccer.
Do people think that we could play soccer? No, no. To feel like professionals, you know.
Yeah.
To be in a scene where everyone goes like, "Ah, fuck you, fuck you," you know, like, "Ah, yeah," you know. It just feels great. It really feels wonderful. Like,
The crowd seems
like the Argentinian, yeah. No? You know, yeah, because we would get there. We shot for a week on the stadium, so the first day it was like, oh, unbelievable, all these like 1,000 people singing and saying horrible things about us. But then every morning we would get there and hear like, fuck you, we hate you, fuck you. And it was like a good reminder that we're nothing, you know?
The crowd scenes were great. I love how the camera will just stay on the crowd and we, you know, don't see the important goals or important, you know, because there's so much going on just in the faces of the people.
Yeah, that's what Carlos says, that he, it's wonderful that whenever you think of a football movie, you know, where there's football, you always relate to the Nike commercials and to all of those things. I don't know why. I mean, it's like football is such a non-filmic sport because it's quite irrational. It doesn't follow any rules. It's kind of hard to rehearse and do a scene in football, you know? Like, it's just not you don't plan moves like in American football or in baseball or in basketball where you can, like, okay, you go
you
here,
have, like,
and
showdown
you go here,
between
you go
the,
here and we do this and we do that, no? In football, it's just like, what the hell? I don't know if any of you guys saw the Barcelona and Chelsea match today. It's like one example of, like, what? You know, I mean...
What happened?
Barcelona won...
I'm sorry, I missed
three
it.
Okay. Minutes away. I mean, they were 3 minutes away from losing the most important match ever. And suddenly, bam, with 10 players against 11, boom, they scored a goal.
But a goal, you know, not a touchdown, you know?
Yeah.
No, I you know,
they oh, yeah, I should have said soccer, right?
Yeah, it's
sorry.
No, I know the game. I just missed today's game. How many people caught the
but
game?
But Carlos says something that is not dramatic, you know? It's not very dramatic football. There's no passes. There's no choices made. You know, there's not a moment where the team gets together. They go back to play. There's not a moment where the pitcher always has a choice to make. And there's a connection and there's tension. And in football, it just happens. And it's 90 minutes of 22 guys moving around. And you cannot break it down into pieces, you know.
And so, to be honest, we were quite overwhelmed also by the pressure we had because the bar was set so high with that Sylvester Stallone film about football, you know, with Pelé and Beckenbauer.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that was crazy, wasn't it, no?
Yeah.
So we couldn't equal...
That's
Sylvester
a lot of pressure to live up to that.
I mean,
yeah.
Imagine having to play a match and that decides whether you go out of prison or not. That's fantastic, no? Like, that was really... I don't know. Hold on.
I don't think anybody here saw it. Did anybody
of
see
course
this?
Of course they saw
it. Okay.
Yay!
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Rudy Cursi has a chance there. You know the film is coming out on the 8th, right?
This Which film?
Is, yeah,
this
yeah,
film.
Yeah.
So it's 3 days after yesterday, Cinco de Mayo.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
It's Ocho de Mayo. So
today's,
please let everyone
today's
know.
De Mayo.
No?
Now, what did you do on Cinco? How did you observe the holiday?
Cinco de Mayo?
Observe.
Yeah.
as in go to like a church,
right?
Like, go, thank you, thank you, Cinco de Mayo, thank you. No, we actually, I don't know for any. I mean, the things that the Cinco de Mayo. Okay, for anyone of those who doesn't know, because apparently there are people that don't know what Cinco de Mayo is. It's the Battle of Puebla. Which is the battle that Mexico won against the French, but the war was lost, but the battle was won.
Yeah.
So that's the one that is celebrated. And the thing is that, it's over and over. The story repeats every time. And it's and the thing is that actually in Mexico you don't celebrate it that much. I mean, it's a national holiday, but it's not like... it's here. Actually, it's not the Mexican independence. It's not the Mexican
but
revolution.
But everyone celebrates the Mexican independence in the States, the Cinco de Mayo, even the Mexicans.
Yeah.
Which is really funny. It's like once you cross the border, you're like, what the hell? I mean, if there's a party, let's do it.
But
if these güeros think we're celebrating something, let's say yes and grab a drink and enjoy.
That's our day. Okay, fine. And also the what's funny about Cinco de Mayo is that it can be celebrated on an Ocho de Mayo. You know, I mean, I heard that sometimes there's like, okay, today is Cinco de Mayo. It wasn't, I mean, it's not the 5th of May. It's like on the 7th or 8th.
They celebrated here the Tres de Mayo.
They celebrated on a Sunday.
Yeah,
on a Sunday.
The Sunday. He said, okay. Oh, better a Sunday. Tres okay, de Mayo. Let's have the Mexican independence on a Sunday because we have no work. Yeah. Good. That's... Okay. That's how much it really counts, you know.
I like the idea of the character being a great soccer player, but you don't really care about soccer as much as you care about singing, and you have such a deluded idea about you had to sing. I know in real life you're a great singer.
It's you against 2 million hits in YouTube.
Yeah.
Well, this song became this. Song became a huge hit. Yeah.
Yeah.
So can you talk about how?
I'm with you, man. I'm with you. It's a shitty song,
but it's a big
just makes
hit.
Sense
it's
in
a big
the,
hit.
Could you
this
talk
film.
About how you found it for the film? How did I Want You to Want Me come into the movie?
Oh, that's just a generational kind of thing with Carlos. When he was the song was a hit in '78. I was born in 78 and you were born 1 year after. And and so basically, this is the song that Carlos would sing in front of a mirror. And that's why he wanted to do not only a football film, but also like exercise another wet dream. And let me have you singing I Want You to Want Me, you know. And he made the version in Spanish. And it actually falls really well into the character.
It's perfect for the character.
It's perfect for the character. It's perfect to do rip-offs of the song. But it's not only, I mean, what was surprising is that until I heard the song and started to do it, I realized that it's been used in like 1,000 movies already. but never like this. Never like this.
Would you sing a little piece of the song for us? I mean, it would be kind of cool, no? Even though he needs always his beautiful dancers, you know, we would be in rehearsals, you know. Like
okay, we have some in the front row here who, you know.
Oh, you would dance behind? Because, you know, we would be in the middle of like, oh, so these guys come from, and he would say, oh, I have rehearsal, gotta go. Until I saw the film, I realized it was about these beautiful women that are dancing behind him. please do a little thing.
No, it's not Cinco de Mayo.
We missed it.
Seis de Mayo.
Seis de Mayo.
Yeah. One day we could have. Sorry.
Just as good.
It's one day after. My, you don't want to hear my song the morning after. No, please don't make me do this.
Okay, let's instead of doing that, we'll take some questions from the audience, and then whenever you feel the mood to start singing. So
okay,
but go ahead, and I'll repeat. Go ahead. Well, yeah, why did you choose? You both could, you know, you could both do many, many types of movies, and why did you specifically really jump in on this one?
I guess, X-Men didn't pay enough, and
X-Men was in Mexico,
yeah. No, I think it's more about just getting together with your family, you know, in a way. I mean, we worked for this film since 2003, maybe something like that, and it was just ready today. But just the idea of being acting in the same film was kind of heavy, you know. After Y Tu Mamá También, that it meant so much for us, that it was such an amazing film. At least that's what I think, and also changed our lives. And we wanted to be respectful to that, and to respect also the family we made it there. So I have to say that it was Carlos. Carlos is the guy that did the loneliest process of Y Tu Mamá También, which was writing the script. You know, he wrote the script, he made those characters, and the script was beautiful and amazing. And there we didn't give notes or anything. We got a script, and it was beautiful. And it made a lot of sense to then be part of his first project. And I guess a year ago, he was ready. You know, that's why. It took so long.
Was there anything about the theme? I mean, obviously, it's a movie about dealing with fame.
Obviously, but the brotherhood thing, you know,
right.
It's like the first cha-cha-cha film where these three guys that are directors and brothers and get together to have a company and to finance films. It's the chance of the brother of the guy who directed Y Tu Mamá También is us as best friends playing brothers. It is a family reunion in a way. And it does have a lot to do with love, I guess, as simple as that.
Okay, right down here.
Hola. I'd like to ask the question in Spanish, but I know I want everybody to get the answer as well. But I'm very interested in seeing how your personal lives affect your acting. I know you both are fathers. So I want to know if your experience of fatherhood has influenced your acting in any way.
Well, the question about how your personal lives affect your acting, and you're both fathers, I think just very recently, though. So could you go ahead?
Thank you.
You had kids a few months apart, right?
It's definitely, I mean, it influences...
Is that planned?
Did you plan to have babies a few months apart?
I called him, but he didn't have his cell phone on, so
exactly.
I was like, "I'm ready, oh man!"
Yeah, I couldn't answer.
Do it now.
Yeah. Do it. So it
but
was like that.
It took him 5 months. You know that the director would tell you also that he's quite slow sometimes. It took him 5 months to react. So
yeah, I take longer.
Okay, you beat me.
You know, Diego. It has.
Te la
you know,
puse de pechitos.
Yeah. It was a pass in the area to push the ball.
Kill
but,
me. Go
of
ahead.
Course, it. Of course, it has a lot to do now. I mean, it's like when I don't know. Did your relationship with water changed once you went into the ocean? Well, yeah. Of course, everything changes. No, and in a way, having becoming a father changes absolutely everything. And in what ways? Well, I mean, it changes all the time. So I don't know. It's kind of it's such an immense change that it's very difficult to say one thing how it changed the acting. Of course, it changed everything. No,
I think it makes everything easier. No, more simple. There's just one reason for you to be here, and it's to please make sure someone is good, be there for someone, and then everything else is part of that. But just a little part of that, you know. There's just one big reason, and it affects us. Gael says everything, even this Q&A. I want to go home.
Oh.
Diego should have played Cursi.
Uh-huh. I'm very corny. Sorry.
We hear that your baby looks exactly like you, except I guess without the beard. But
no.
That's for the beard, actually. They look
exactly.
Very similar. Yeah,
has hair everywhere. No. He looks, he's so beautiful. He's not like me. He's like the mother.
Oh, do you want to do another, or are you going to do another movie together?
Uh-huh. Probably, yeah. I mean, for sure.
Yeah,
it wasn't 9 years since we acted again. Before and now this time. And it was so perfect, you know. It was such an amazing process that obviously we're going to repeat it. But
we had to wait until there was a lot of people demonstrating outside our houses saying, "Act again, act again, please." And okay. You know, it was due to social pressure. No, but it's definitely a great... I mean, we want to do it, but obviously we want to be very careful with what we do. No, we want to do something that's very nice. And actually, I mean, in this film, we didn't get a chance to work that much together because we only had like 4 scenes together. That's it?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Enough. Hmm. Yeah. But Alfonso says, the producer and the director of Y Tu Mamá También, that one day in a Q&A he said, and I loved it as an answer to that, he said, "Don't worry, it probably won't be a film, but it would be an ad, an infomercial at night where they're like dressed as the characters, you know, but at 50 years
buy
old.
Buy this new blender."
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
I'm tough. Hey, I'm corny. Yeah. You know what? I love this blender. Why do you love it?
Oh, it's
things
so
like
good.
You know, like Mr. Yeah. T does. You know, we're going to be next to Mr. T selling some shitty product in a few years.
You should have a Rudo y Cursi blender. It would fit.
Yeah. Right
there. Yeah, could you talk about your, you formed a production company together, so could you talk about how you work together with that?
Yeah. We got it, it's been like 4 years now, no?
Something five.
Like
a,
five?
Yeah.
Wow. Five really so successful?
No,
it's more or less we've been talking about it for a while, and we work together, each of us, in our particular projects, but also allowing and helping, wanting to create a creative hub that can materialize other people's points of view and visions. So that's what the main reason why we wanted to do it. As well, we have a documentary film festival called Ambulante, which actually is the best thing that we've ever done. It's fantastic. It's actually a really nice film festival. Please, if you ever, I mean, some of you might know it, but some of you might not. It's a wonderful, wonderful, beautiful film festival that travels around Mexico in 16 cities, including this Mexican city called Los Angeles, which is in California.
Yeah.
It's opening recently, no? Like
in
the Los Angeles Film Festival. It's a really nice film festival that just about showing documentaries, preferably in open air cinemas and for free. It captured the already captive documentary film fans that want to see documentaries, and it's become something really nice, you know, really a really interesting project that also evolves in every single city it goes. And apart from that, we're just producing a lot of films. Recently, Sin Nombre, which is out in the cinemas now. Please go and see it after you've seen Rudy Cursi.
Yeah.
or
you can buy tickets for both
for
and
both.
Then choose what to see. But
yeah, and then next time also do the same. What else?
Well, the company was at the beginning. It felt that we thought we should own what we were doing, but today the company has made many films without us as actors, and we realized that the main thing is like to draw attention to those who we believe need some attention, you know, directors that need to be shooting, and it's like being part of the audience but having a chance to say what kind of films we want to see, and it's been really cool, and the family's been growing, and it's amazing. And so yeah, it's the best that
it's
can happen
Kanana.
To an actor. Kanana. Yeah.
Okay, right down here.
It's kind of a two-part question. They said that you had felt drawn to the opposite roles. So my question is, one, what drew you to the other's role? And two, what did you do to adjust into the role once you found that it was the opposite of what you were?
So it was, just to repeat, so in case people didn't hear, it was said that you were originally drawn to the opposite role. So what was it that drew you? Is that true, or is that sort of a mythology?
Myth.
Another myth.
I would never play a goalkeeper,
like,
ever. Ever.
But it's
ever,
like it's
ever,
like
ever,
the
ever,
Obama ever. Thing, no? It's so clear that it's the director trying to put your attention into something else than he's directing, you know? The first interview he made, he said, oh, Gael wanted to play tough. And then Diego said, oh, he wants to play Cursi. And it's just not real. I mean, it's no way. I mean,
what is the Obama thing?
Oh, no, sorry. I wanted to say Osama. I missed by a letter. Yeah. I missed the whole thing big time. Well, but that has been happening to us in a few interviews.
As
too.
You can see, now there's another myth growing about what
no,
Diego
but
just
this
said.
Thing of like, really, he put the attention in Gael wanting to play Rudo. And Gael never wanted to play Rudo. He just said, oh, I'm kind of Rudo too, you know, which might have happened to you guys. And the idea is two guys that are tough and corny. They're both tough and corny, and sometimes
right.
They're cornier than tougher. And
Diego the other day ordered in the morning some huevos rancheros, and he hesitated and said, oh, maybe the pancakes. And now it's not like I'm going to be saying all the time, he wants pancakes, but he really ordered huevos rancheros. That's not true, you know? Like, he ended up having huevos rancheros, but said,
Carlos,
well, why not pancakes? Just for
it's a first-time director, like, Carlos, so
yeah.
he thought he needed to come with a story to tell.
And also, as if harassing a director would get you a part, like, oh, we need, okay, I'll write two parts. You know, that's not true. And he's not here, so So he's not able to have any voice right now.
Okay. Okay, go ahead, right here. Yes.
Yeah.
Team America football. That's
soccer. Wow. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
You're Charolastra speaking. Yeah.
That's why you got the best seat. No, in you're in right yeah, in the middle, exactly. Fifth row. Amazing. I'm going to tell you about Rudo. Rudo means, can be translated as tough, but also like in the lucha libre, you know, the wrestling, the Mexican wrestling, there's the los técnicos and los rudos. And the rudos are the guys that never follow the law, you know, that whenever the referee is looking somewhere else, they cheat and they kind of grab you in the balls and, you know, and they suffer. So those are los rudos. So rudo has these both meanings, you know, tough and also a cheater.
Yeah, and cursi means it's a mix. It's mixed. It's not that easy. It's not corny as such. It's kind of corny, cute, and but a kitsch, exactly. But
gracias.
He had just to arrive. He knows it. He's very corny, so he knows. yeah, exactly. Kitsch also. But there's a duality. Like Carlos wanted to do some kind of psychological analysis of how there's not only a yin and yang, but there's a tough and corny in everybody.
Right.
Because the same thing can be seen as, oh, that's very tough, and somebody can say, I find it very corny. It can be that kind of thing. I mean, and this comes from an image when he was climbing, he did a road trip with his brother, and he stood overlooking the Grand Canyon, you know, in all its splendor and beautiful. And he had this Australian hat, and he was very skinny back then, and he's very tall, and he, you know, he with jeans, you know, and like denim and rough, and this 10 and 8 year old kids from the United States were walking behind him, and they said, and one of the kids said, "Hey, don't you think that guy looks really tough?" And the other guy said, "No, I actually find him very corny." and he went like, "Yes, that's who I am. You know, like this is who I am." And that's why he called this film with this ridiculous name. Because it's actually, when we first heard about it, it was like, what? Rudo y Cursi? No, that's on, I don't know, it's not like a film title. But they always choose those film titles. The more you talk about it, the more you get used to it. So it's like the Beatles kind of thing.
It strikes me that the fight scene between the brother, I mean, after you've lost everything, that's such a great scene. And it's, you know, it shows the anger, but it shows the love also. I mean, it also shows sort of two sides of the relationship. Could you talk maybe about film, you know, what it was like doing that scene?
I guess it's the only scene we rehearsed like from beginning to end. We went to block the scene a few months before we even, a few weeks before we start shooting, and we always thought it was a very important scene in the film. But when we shot the scene, it was the last day, and we were rushed, and there was like an hour and a half to shoot it, and suddenly it became like a short film you were shooting for a film school, you know? We had like, oh, fuck, run! And no one was even watching what we were doing. And we became these very stupid divas, and we shouted to everyone, like, yeah,
we did the great Christian Bale impersonations. Yeah. And stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, imagine, two
Christian Bales in Spanish, which can...
In Spanish.
There's even more words to describe that. The F word. So we went crazy, and it was perfect, I have to say, because everyone was in the mood, you know, of a fight. You know, everyone was ready to
punch. Carlos Corombo was doing a perfect Herzog impersonation.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, the boat over the river. Let's try it.
Yeah. Okay, we just have time for one more question, and then you can burst into song if you want. But okay, well, you're waving. Okay, we'll do two
more, no?
And the guy who's
okay. More.
Well, you want to, you know, you want
to go. Two.
I gotta go. Because he has to go see his baby. Go ahead, the waving guy. So could you talk about your aspirations as actors, and then if there are specific actors or directors that you want to work with?
I think the most general yet the most clear aspiration I have as an actor is to be able to do what I want.
I like whatever. No, what do you want? This will be the next question. No, but there's no time for that.
We don't have time for that today. So yeah,
I think the other day we were trying to describe success, you know, and we said success is just happiness, you know. Success is just the chance to be around the people you want to be around, and the chance to love and be loved and be happy, as simple as that. And I do believe that till today my career has been very successful because I've always been happy. And the day I see myself in the mirror and I want to be someone else, I'll probably quit. So, yeah. And who do I want to work with?
And
I'm very corny.
You're a side.
And then your son can take over for you.
And who do I want to work with? I have to say Alfonso Cuarón is one guy I want to work with again. I don't know when, but for sure.
Harry Potter 5,
yeah. Kike Macizo.
Kike Macizo.
I worked with him in a very important time in my life, and he changed my life, and he basically gave me confidence to be an actor again. But I was really young, and I want to try again. I think he's the best director I've worked with so far.
And I'm guessing Sean Penn was okay to work with.
Kissing Sean Penn?
I'm guessing.
It's a nightmare I have every every once in a while.
I'm guessing it was
it's good,
good
that you
I'm
took
guessing,
him out of guessing, this of this romantic with the romantic mode he was getting in, and that's why he's mentioned kissing Sean Penn. Which leads me to the most important question tonight, which I want to. I mean, I know. I'm sure all of you want to know who's a better kisser, if Sean Penn or me. Or Tom Hanks, because
Tom Hanks for far. No.
Okay, so no. It's down to Sean and go ahead.
Sean and Gael, are you
Tom
serious?
Tom Hanks.
I have to say Sean Penn because I don't have to see him every morning. You know, with Gael, is that mouth reminds me. Such a bad time. I was really drunk when I did it, but it was not enough to forget, you know. And then there's a film that reminds me.
You know the song Sabor a Mí?
No, can you...
last question, please.
How does it go? No. That's. I think we'll just
that's
leave.
It?
I think
there's one more question here.
Okay. Yeah, no, please. Yeah.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Are there any specific issues or stories that you really want to tell?
Almost, I mean, the thing is that I kind of want to see it as a divide. I mean, storytelling, any issue can be important, depending on how you tell it, no? Any issue, absolutely. And I love that fiction is so intense and so singular in that sense. It for some reason, it can draw from the most frivolous or most non-important issue that we might think of as a really interesting story and a really complex one, and that's why fiction exists, to throw the importance on the things that might seem not important, and also to tangibly mm-hmm. tell approach an issue without it being like, this is the story about this issue, and look at how important this issue is. The story might be shit, but look at how important this issue is, you know? And I think that's when films go in a really wrong way, and one great issue is wasted, you know? It's like, oh, one here we go again, you know? It's like, and they're trying to sell it to us as if it was a film about issues, you know? And it's really, I mean, films are about stories, full stop, you know? And a story about a love relationship in here in Manhattan, you know, can tell about the state of the world. It can tell the story of the state of the world is, the things that are happening. So It's two separate things. I mean, I try not to tell the story of an issue. I try to tell the story and trust that the issues will be there and the complexity will be there.
Well, and this movie does that a lot, because this movie has a lot going on about.
But at the end, it's the story of these two brothers.
It has a light touch, and it's a fun movie.
I would have to say that I'm pretty sure I'll never do a film about it. But an issue that's there always, and I guess also because where I live and where I come from, it's impunity and my relation with impunity. And but I because it's so important, I don't think I'll ever do a film about it. You know, it's
one more question over there.
Okay.
Yes, you.
Yeah, Carlos Cuarón's first film as a director. So how did you like working with the first? How was it working with a first-time director?
Every first-time director is different. Carlos, I would say, even though he's gonna hate my answer,
he's gonna probably see the podcast or maybe see the.
Yeah, he's a writer. Yeah,
in YouTube,
he's a writer, and as a writer, everything was on the page. Every time we needed an answer and he couldn't give it the answer to us, we would have to go back to the script, and the answer was there. And it was simple, and that's why it took him 6 years to write the script, you know? Because whenever he said, this is ready, it was ready. And sometimes as an actor, you need a director there that tells you something else about something different that I don't know how, but connects with what you're doing. And a writer can never do that, you know? A writer is like, no, but you're coming from here, you're going there, you open the door and you find her. And you're like, yeah, but what do you feel? I mean, how does this relate to that song? That, no, you open the door and you find her. And you're like, okay. You go, you open the door, and there she is, and it works, you know? So it's a fantastic first-time director because he's the best writer from Mexico, at least. No?
Yeah. Please, I was gonna say, I was gonna ask you to do something, but I cannot. No! Please, what was I gonna say? Look at the video clip, because right now, my singing skills are not so great. New York has been really harsh on my throat, but look on YouTube. Look for the video clip, the full video clip of what you just saw. This was just a little glimpse. Actually, this is just promotion for the video clip of the YouTube. Yeah. So go watch the movie. Recommend the movie so that people go and see the clip in YouTube. And just write, I want you to want me, or quiero que me quieras, Tato, or Gael. But
okay. Well, we're gonna go celebrate Barcelona beating Chelsea.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. The Pinewood Dialogues at Museum of the Moving Image are made possible by generous support from the Pannonia Foundation. To learn more about the museum, visit www.movingimage.us.